Hello, Cancer, and welcome to your 2022-23 Astrology Studio. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, you know that. And this is the audio portion of the reading. There is a separate video that I have done just because I had the video set up and thought I'd show you around your chart, though. In case you are a student of media, you can notice the different experience of audio and of video. Maybe you can figure out why I prefer to do astrology in audio. In any event, here we are. Some really remarkable astrology for you personally at this time. The solar return chart that I am using is the new moon that took place on the 28th. Sun conjunct moon, moon conjunct sun in the sign Cancer at 7 degrees and change. Very exciting chart because it formed an exact square to really what is the most helpful and useful transit that that you have going for you, though, you know, we'll certainly make use of everything and anything, but the most useful, I think, advantageous transit that you have going on is Jupiter, one of the ruling planets of Cancer in Aries, in the 10th house. This is, in many ways, it is as good as it gets in terms of a transit, especially a 10th house transit. The 10th house being where you find direction, where you seek to make a name for yourself, and where you have the most satisfying forms of success in life. And the sign Aries is important to all of the other signs because where you see Aries in the chart, regardless of what sign someone is one of the places in their chart where you can get information about how they are the most likely to find themselves, where and how they are most likely to self-actualize. And I don't know if this is a totally original theory of mine. I've been doing this sun sign work in such depth and for so long that I've long ago ran out of ideas that I got from other people several hundred readings ago. However, The distinct thing about the sign Cancer that I think is overlooked by astrology is that yours is one of the more outgoing signs and aspirational signs and one of the most inclined to want to make your mark on the world. But more than that, the process of finding yourself and discovering yourself and actualizing yourself takes place in this house number 10, where you are likely to be seen, be noticed, and attain positions of leadership and do things that are personally meaningful and that support your growth. Now, like all tools, this can be abused, but that said, if you live your dharma, if you live in such a way that honors the fragility of the world and understands that the leadership struggle that we are in, that the absence of leadership in the world and the lack of courage that so many people feel to take leadership is so often answered by corrupt people taking charge. I mean, we wonder why it's so easy for corrupt people to take charge. And the reason that it is because there is a lack of initiative that so many people experience. Now, they don't call it that. They think, well, I'll do what's convenient, or I'm going to do what I won't get noticed. I don't want to stick out. I don't want to go contrary, et cetera, et cetera. However, you may not, and you do not need to have that issue. With Cancer having Aries on the 10th, you are a natural leader And when you seek to understand your existence, you will often find yourself in a position where you have to make decisions and where your ideas lead the way. Now, this is highlighted in 2022 and well into 2023. Let's see. Right around the time of your next birthday, Jupiter enters Taurus, which is another placement that you will find very helpful. Though, for all of the time in between now and your next birthday, Jupiter will be a little bit before your next birthday. Jupiter will be in Aries, and it'll dip briefly into Pisces. The dip into Pisces takes place in late 2022. And I'm always intrigued by transits that span between the 9th and the 10th houses, particularly when there's a retrograde. For you, Pisces is the 9th solar house. And the intriguing thing about that is the ease of access of a thing that is generally not thought very highly of in the world, which is a spiritual check-in and an ethics review. Now, this is very important relationship between the 9th and the 10th houses, and I want to thank Barbara Han Clow in one particular class for pointing this out. And what she pointed out is that people like to go straight to the 10th house without going through the 10th house, meaning take charge, take leadership, summon the abilities of other people, use your charisma and get them working for you and all this stuff, and start making decisions for other people is one manifestation of the 10th. And a lot of people like to do this without going through the ethical and spiritual tests of the 9th, whatever they may be about. Study your chart, look this up, see what you've got in these different houses of your natal chart, not just your solar chart, but your natal chart. And there's a lot of relational lessons that come through the experience of the 7th and the 8th houses, learning how to negotiate and have equitable transactions. But the 9th is about having an ethical framework. It's about having a vision for yourself. It's having a sense of direction, a sense of your own potential. But the 9th is also where there is this question of right versus wrong. And so anyone who jumps to the 10th and skips the 9th is not asking those questions of right and wrong. And so what you get late in 2022 is Jupiter briefly returning to your 9th house for a kind of a pause in the action and a reflection about whether you're doing the right thing for yourself. And that's a chance to reassess, reevaluate, and change course prior to Jupiter re-entering Aries. I think that takes place in December of some kind. Let's just get these dates exactly right while we are here. If you'll bear with me one moment, I'd rather not stop the recording. So let's see. Station of Jupiter. Jupiter goes retrograde at almost 9 degrees on July 28th. Jupiter re-enters Pisces on October 28th. Okay, retrograde. And then Jupiter re-enters Aries just ahead of the solstice on December 20th. So that interval of Jupiter in Pisces is this review phase. It's a chance to reevaluate your direction, to reassess your goals, to reassess your organizational plans, And the thing about the 10th house that I'm not in love with this delineation of the 10th, but I admit that it exists. It's the thing that you want to be known for. And I propose humility around what you want to be known for. I take the example of Ben Franklin, whose business card simply said, Benjamin Franklin, printer. So the thing of what you want to be known for, I think, is a distracting element of the 10th house, and one that is best handled with real discretion. And, you know, if you're going to be known for something with Aries on the 10th house, the thing to be known for is sincerity. It's the willingness to be yourself and to risk not pretending, not being phony, not blending in, but simple sincerity. And that means do what really is important to you. Do what you really, truly feel called to do. And better yet, strive to find yourself and notice the way in which and the place in which you are doing so. Now, this goes along with a much longer-term transit that highlights this theme going back all the way back to 2018, which is Chiron in the 10th house. For you, Chiron in Aries is Chiron going across the 10th house. And this can have a diversity of different manifestations. One of them is the crisis of authority. We here in the West have a lot of authority issues. And part of the way these manifest is extremely immature people, selfish and immature people, ending up with vast amounts of power and money. And people who don't have so much aspiration or willingness to rush into the void of leadership, either getting trampled over or kind of left out in a way. So Chiron in Aries for you is focusing the question of how you handle authority on all levels, how you handle your own authority, how you treat people when you have any power over them whatsoever. And the message, I think, overall of these transits is to be magnanimous. It's worth living the idea of noblesse oblige. Now, we don't really have very much noblesse or oblige in our society, but when you're granted the kinds of gifts that you are granted, both by the natal orientation of your chart and also by the transits that you're having, you have a responsibility to the world to be a fair person and to be as helpful as you can possibly be. So all of this is apropos of the theme of some tremendous transits through your 10th house. And the thing that I'm most optimistic about is that the center feature chart of this whole Cancer 2022 era is this beautiful new moon chart that took place on the 28th, where the new moon is exactly square Jupiter. This is about finding your confidence. It's about finding your voice. It is about being willing to step up to challenges, particularly where there is an absence of leadership. And Jupiter always insists that we be fair to people and fair to ourselves. So there's that equanimity thing going on, that sense of do what's right for everyone. Okay, so the other feature is a couple of other points that this new moon aspected that I think are worth explicating a little bit. First of all, the new moon in Cancer was square Jupiter, but Jupiter in that chart was opposite a point that doesn't get really mentioned very much at all by pop astrology or by classical astrology. It's a relatively new discovery, and it's called Logos. And this is a very, very heavily weighted down term. It was subject to all kinds of philosophical hijacking by the Catholics and all of this. But I think of Logos as being in Libra, which the new moon was square, that which makes sense and can make sense when expressed in language. So people think things make sense until they try to explain it, and then they realize that that does not make any sense at all. However, that is not going to work for you, and you need to know when you are making sense and when you are not, and this includes and especially includes making sense to yourself. It is a difficult state of affairs when someone is not making sense to themselves, but they think that they are and they proceed like they are, but they're not. And so it is worth doing ongoing reality checks to make sure that you've got your emotional and mental bodies lined up and that you are acting on or at least aware of how you actually feel and are connecting your actions with a deeper level of feeling and seeking what I will call the language test, to write your theory down, to read it back, and see if it actually makes sense to you, and to keep rewording it until you are communicating with yourself, until you make sense to yourself. The next thing that this new moon aspect, and this completes the Grand Cross, and it does involve two, three actually minor planets, and those are in early Capricorn, and those minor planets are the Centaur Pholus, the second Centaur, one that everyone should know something about, and I'll tell you a little bit about it in a moment, conjunct the trans-Neptunian point Quasar. That's out in the realm of Pluto. Pholus is in a bit from Neptune right now. It's got a long, elongated orbit. It's a Neptune grazer or Neptune crosser. And then Quasar is, it has a kind of a round orbit outside of Neptune, further out than Pluto, but orbiting our sun. Now, what is so interesting about this conjunction? It's going to last a very long time. It's going to last for many years. The conjunction of Pholus and Quasar is that they are both about a relationship to the ancestors. They are about a relationship in the sense of Pholus of the ancestors back to your great grandparents. In the case of Quasar, it is your ancestors all the way back to the beginning of the origins of the tribe, the beginning of time. That would be maybe Adam and Eve, if you're of that Judeo-Christian persuasion. There are other possibilities. It may be that you trace your ancestry back, all the way back to King Henry VIII in England, or hopefully not that. But with this influence, with this new moon opposite Pholus and Quasar, you are being guided to seek the wisdom of the ancestors as a primary relationship. So this will be an interesting exercise. I mean, this is not the kind of thing that most, ordinary folk normally do. In here in Western culture, we don't really even celebrate Days of the Dead. We run around with Halloween costumes on. rather than honoring, going to the cemetery and honoring the graves of our ancestors and their lives. I mean something more active and more conscious even than that, which is to maintain a daily active relationship with some of your favorite ancestors, and maybe even one or two that you didn't like very much. Say their names, ask them for help and for guidance, ask them to give you perspective about your life from the viewpoint of their life. They lived in very, very different times, especially our grandparents and great-grandparents. They knew nothing of this digital world and of the kinds of challenges and control dramas that we face specifically because we are so conditioned by the digital world. And so I would say that with both Pholus and Cuellar, you have a line of information, a line of access, a direct energetic access point to the pre-digital world. This is something that we all need and that you are very fortunate to have working for you because I think that the answers to the chaos of the digital world are going to be found in the pre-digital world, or at least a lot of them are going to be found. And one of the very most important things that we can do in tapping into what you might call the kind of core psyche of humanity is understanding the necessity of living creatively every day as a way of being closer to God. Whatever anyone may think of God or what concept they may have wrapped around the deeper concept of God, God is a creative force. If God means anything, all the religions of the world basically say that God is that which created creation. And so when you live in a creative way, you are living in a more goddessly, godly way. Now, it is very fortunate for you that you have an opening to do this that is an unusual opening, which is the presence of Pisces on the ninth house. Now, normally, the fifth or so would be thought of as a creative place, but I'm going to take the approach that where you have Pisces in your chart is where you are the most likely to want to express your creativity. Pisces is as much the sign of pure creativity as you can get because it's the sign of all possibilities and it is the sign of all potential and it is it is the most free sign because it understands the confines of physicality in a universe of many different energetic potentials. Right, so in the middle of all this infinity, here we are in these finite bodies, watching time go by the minute, and watching the battery drain, and the bills come due, and all of this stuff. Well, Pisces is the closest that we can come to understanding how we can express ourselves freely inside of that paradox. And Pisces for you is lit right now. There are a diversity of influences, though some of them are we would think of as minor planets, but there is a lot of energy in there. And the most creative act that you can do is the act of visioning your life. It's not just about what you might paint or sculpt or record or make as music or whatever it might be. The creative element of your life is entirely the self-creative element of the vision for yourself that you continuously grow into. Now, we talked earlier about the relationship between the 9th and the 10th, and so there's going to be a lot of Jupiter in the 10th for the next year, but there's going to be that interval of Jupiter in the 9th for you that is meaning it's going to re-enter Pisces, and that is your chance to make sure that what you are acting to create in the world is in alignment with what your self-creative vision is for yourself. So you get that check-in. And so I've called this, just as recently as 20 minutes ago, a house of ethical inquiry. But the ethical part that I'm talking about here, the nature of the ethical inquiry is, am I creating this thing that matches my vision, my sense of my creation for and of myself? Okay, let's take a couple of more thoughts. We had, we talked about the conjunction of, we covered the whole Grand Cross, which is, just to refresh that Grand Cross, and the chart that I post will have this highlighted, and it's also in the video. The Grand Cross is the new moon in Cancer square Jupiter in Aries, which is square the conjunction in early Capricorn, Pholus Quaer, and then that is square Logos in Libra. All I can tell you about that in summary and in closing to wrap up that discussion of the Grand Cross is that is a lot of integrity and the power of integrity. And once you start to become familiar with, from playing this a couple of times, looking at the chart, looking things up, maybe read the horoscope for your sign, you'll see I allude to some of these things, and drop me a note if you have any questions, is as you start to line up these different properties, you concentrate your power of integrity, the ability to do the things that you do because you are integrated, because you are unified with yourself, rather than in some way disjointed or alienated from yourself. Okay, so that's good for now. Let's take a break here. We'll play a little music, and I'm going to contemplate my reading of two houses. I want to wrap up with a reading of two particular houses. One where the Mars retrograde is going to be, and that spans the majority of time between now and your next birthday. That spans between in total, mid-August through mid-March. Because when Mars goes retrograde, it stays in one sign a long time. And the retrograde is only a portion of that. But Mars is going to be in your solar 12th house for 7 months. It's Gemini. That's a special condition. I want to talk about that special condition. Then Pluto enters your eighth house for the first time in March of 2023. I promise, talk a blue streak about this till people are sick of hearing about it, but we have to keep thinking about it, which is the impact of the effect of Pluto in Aquarius. Aquarius is your eighth house. It's like the 12th, one of the more cryptical houses of the 12, both involved with things of an occult or secret nature, both involved with matters of the non-physical, both involved with radical transformations, both involve a relationship to the ancestors and the afterlife and all of that. And so there are going to be these two kind of, let's say, psychological and spooky transits coming up, and I'd like to do my best to share my observations about them that I have been gathering over the recent weeks, months, and years. Okay, a little bit of music from Vision Quest featuring Jelko, and I'll be back in a bit. To part two of your audio reading. So I closed up the first section by talking about how two of the most cryptic and misunderstood houses of them all are the 8th and the 12th. And the 8th in your chart is going to it's active right now, which is good. You've got preparation. Saturn is there. The 12th is going to be the scene of a somewhat complicated retrograde of Mars that takes place from October through January, but the total span of time that Mars is going to be in your 12th is from August through March. So that's about 7 months. For something like, I forget how many days Mars is retrograde, 80 days or something like that, but the whole process takes 7 months. And the 12th for you, Gemini, is a extraordinarily sensitive place. But one of the most interesting things about it is that the 12th has a kind of dualism to it in that it is a parallel reality to normal waking consciousness. And the house associated with that in the chart for the sign Cancer, right? This is the chart that I'm reading, not your personal chart, but the chart for the whole sign Cancer. So the house placements are a kind of inherent placement for you. You have Gemini there, and Gemini is this sign that is the very definition of, it is the very concept of dualism, because there are twins represented in that sign. And it is, so therefore, there are all manner of opposites that are described. And the prevailing experience of a double reality of some kind. Now, this is not so much a split as it is a dialogue. At least on a good day, there are people who will definitely experience this as a split, or as a contradiction of some kind, or as a crisis getting along with themselves. The 12th has all of those properties anyway. The 12th is where we tend to sweep unfinished business and unfinished karma and the unresolved matters of the ancestors almost all end up in the 12th house. And so the thing about the 12th house is that, as the Brits call it, it is the dustbin of the zodiac. The dustbin meaning the trash can. The trash in the 12th, though, is not very often taken out because it's kind of like, I'll give you an example of a freaky 12th house thing. On Vashon Island, on the property where the Jesus Barn used to be, so now you're sounding, if you say that, you sound like a real Vashon Islander, but there used to be a Jesus Barn, that is to say a barn with Jesus written on the side of the barn, which then fell down because it had been there so long. And on that property was a sinkhole, a hole as if to the center of the earth, and people would come and throw things down there like old refrigerators and washing machines. That is very, very 12th house. What is this sinkhole? What is this thing where the Jesus bar used to be? What's going on there? One other freaky thing. Well, there's a number of freaky things about this property. I have an article called Tales from the Other Side of Astrology, where I talk about evacuating a family from a haunting on this property. They used to have a fighting ring where people would work out their conflicts by bare-fisted fighting. All of this near this mystery sinkhole. This in total is the perfect picture of the, let's say, the conflicted 12th that most people live with, and it's why they never dredge anything out of the sinkhole. Well, it's just down there. Well, I mean, that's what happened to my great-great-grandmother. Who cares what it was? Here's the thing. Mars is going to be retrograde. Mars is going to be there for 7 months. And for a bunch of that, from mid-October through mid-January, October, November, December, just shy of 3 months, Mars is going to be retrograde in the 12th in Gemini. That's a little weird. It's a little weird because it is going to have that sense of needing to take out the trash. It is a very psychological transit. It is so psychological that I think it would be ill-advised to do too much work with a therapist who is incapable of going very deep, or astrology work with astrologers who don't really understand the 12th, and I assure you that most of them don't. In fact, most astrologers run from the 12th and run from the 8th, and there's good reasons for it. And the good reasons are these are extraordinarily complex places where people have all kinds of issues that are largely either, in the case of the 8th, imported from other people, or in the case of the 12th, hangovers from bazillions of generations of ancestors. Okay, so to my thinking, and somewhat to my experience, Mars retrograde in the 12th is going to be a kind of a psychological purge. It's going to be wanting to lighten your karmic burden by working out openly with yourself the kinds of questions that most people tend to leave hidden. All that stuff that people just don't want to deal with, and which then they drag around all their lives, and you wonder why people are so stifled and so stymied and can't make a decision and can't do anything that genuinely benefits them or that they want to do. I mean, do you ever wonder why? Maybe you're like this too, but why so many people are like this? Well, they're dragging around the unresolved karma, probably, well, all the way back to the beginning, but of multiple generations of ancestors who themselves had not done very much to work out their karma. Most of their spiritual life involved going to church. That doesn't give you very much. What maybe by accident you have some kind of a discovery or a revelation or accept a blessing, but church doesn't give you much framework for true spiritual exploration. Really being able to either work out karma or find grace, which transcends karma. The church is not giving that out. They say they do, but it's all about sin. So, therefore, we end up inheriting a huge debt of unresolved karma, which tends to run our lives. This Mars retrograde in Gemini is one of the greatest chances of your entire life to unload a barge full of karma. One of the things that would help you is, and I can't tell you this from the perspective of not having your natal chart, right? I'm working with your solar chart. Find out where your Mercury is. And consider that. Look it up a few places. Write to me and ask me about it. Something. But study your Mercury. The reason I say that is because you're likely to do the work of Gemini mostly or largely where your Mercury, the ruler of Gemini, is placed. Your Mercury may well be in Gemini because it's got to be near your sun somewhere. The chances are that your Mercury is going to, if your Cancer sun, it's going to be in Gemini, Cancer, or Leo. If your Cancer rising, it could be anywhere. So check this out. Now, Mars retrograde in Gemini, above all else, is going to be, I already said, unloading this karma of these past generations, but really, the simplest way to describe it is about your relationship to and with yourself. That's what Gemini is. And the thing with the 12th is that relationship in the nature of the 12th is tucked away. It's in a slightly hidden dimension, more accessible through dreams, more accessible through shamanic type experiences, more accessible through penetrating the haze of normal waking consciousness. And we all know this tense relationship between the memory of a very powerful dream you had in the morning, and that dream through the day is trying to infiltrate through into your normal waking consciousness because you want to remember it and you want to work out the material of that dream, but your ego consciousness, your normal A1 level, is trying to hold it down. This is the tension that is going to be burst by Mars retrograde in the 12th. Now, cautionary note, there are many people for whom this is not going to be a comfortable experience, particularly people with Cancer in the ascendant. I'm going to go on a slight limb here and say that the actual 12th, the zone right above the horizon, is an even more sensitive spot than the solar 12th, the zone right before the sign right before yours. In case of Cancer sun, that's Gemini. The actual 12th is an extraordinarily sensitive place, and it is subject to, well, it's almost like the way that many people, especially people who are prone to anxiety, experience it as a balloon that keeps filling and filling and filling, and it won't burst, and you want it to burst, and there's more pressure, and you don't like that there's more pressure, and there seems to be no way to let the pressure off, but it won't burst till it does. So if you are on, consider yourself someone who has some psych issues. This is just to those people. And we all kind of do. But I mean, you really know you have anxiety. You know that you might have some dissociative thing going on, some borderline thing going on. This time period is going to be one to take it slow, be very gentle with yourself, and to seek spiritual solutions before, for example, pharmacological solutions. It is not an especially good time to go to Peru and take ayahuasca with a shaman that you know very little about. In fact, even one that you do know a lot about. I would say that you want to stay, assuming some excess sensitivity here, close to home, close to a, close to your routines, and in a place where you feel safe enough to let your guard down and to have the kinds of experiences you have where, in essence, one world is talking to another world, where the pressure of the psychic realm has a place to vent into the outward, into the universe, is the best way to vent. The 12th, you know, leave your troubles in the forest, for example, give them to the ocean. When the 12th vents into the first, that's the often the sensation of a kind of a break, the sensation of a psychotic break. So again, I'm speaking to people who may have, and I know that in the audience of Astrological Seekers, there are people who have been told they've got problems, they've noticed they've got certain psychological issues going on, and are seeking astrology for its guidance as an alternative to conventional psychology. Take it slow. Take it easy. Be meticulous. And understand, or use this time to understand your relationship to yourself in the ways you have not yet experienced it, that you have not yet noticed it. This is a time of very important learning and of mapping out your own internal dynamics. And I would again note that the house and sign placement of your Gemini, wherever it might be, very easy to find this out. And it's then fairly easy to find some of the attributes of that house and sign placement of Gemini is going to be a very, very helpful way to vent and vent the pressure and use this as a creative opportunity rather than as something that that is disruptive in some way. And there's going to be disruptions, but the question is, you know, of what kind. Now, and the more gentle you are, and the less you outwardly do, the better. Here's the catch of this whole thing, which is that much of this retrograde takes place in a square to Neptune in the ninth house. For you, Cancer is the ninth place of Cancer is Pisces, and so Neptune is at the toward the end, anyway, of a long journey through Pisces, began in the 2012 era and still got a couple few more years to go. I think it's over in like 26 or something like that. And here is where you are under advisement not to follow false spiritual solutions. And this is difficult to figure out. It's particularly difficult to figure out when you are under the influence of the transit and are most likely to do it at a time when your discernment is at its lowest. So you might want to think this through in advance. You know, you want trusted people, tried and true, and the most basic spiritual teachings. All of this multidimensional stuff people are talking about and timeline shifting and all this stuff makes me nervous, because you need a very high degree of proficiency to be able to work that territory skillfully And most people, knowing that they lack that, are then likely to go to someone else to find that. And it might not be a particularly helpful person. So I will share more about this as time goes on. I am doing my best to cover this crucial Mars retrograde square Neptune in every single reading that I'm doing, including almost all 12 of the Your Future, Your Life readings. It will be a central feature in the 2023 annual readings. And one last point before I get into Aquarius and the Eighth, and this does dovetail nicely into the matter of Aquarius and the Eighth, which is to understand the very problematic effects of digital technology on beings who need to be centered and focused on their bodies as their primary sensory vector. What the internet has done is pushed us out of body, to the point where many people are phantoms in the world, strolling down the street, glued to their phone. They could fall down a pit and wouldn't know what hit them, because they'd still be staring at their phone when they hit the bottom. And this is the least of it. The digital trance is this global phenomenon that has led people to be extremely easy to terrorize and manipulate. And so one of the things that is going to be essential to this 12th house transit of Mars is dealing with anxiety, learning the wholesome, healthy ways and the purpose that anxiety might be called upon to serve. Why is it there in the first place? What's going on there? Whose fears are those really distorted and magnified and preserved and left pickled on the basement shelf? Who put those fears in those bottles, sealed them up so nicely, and pulled the curtain in front of them? Okay. So, eighth house, very important house. It is the house associated with, well, the My list of the eighth house is sex, death, jealousy, secrets, surrender, control, contractual transactions of all kinds. The original translation of the eighth house in the earliest textbook in English, astrology, by William Lilly, is death, dowry, and the substance of the bride, etc. So it's all about legacies, wills, and trusts, that which is inherited. It is very similar to the 12th, but the 12th unfolds the 8th into this vastly multidimensional thing. So the 8th is like your immediate in-laws, your immediate partners, generically speaking. The 12th unfolds this out to like all of your ancestors and their in-laws. The eighth is a little bit simpler, but the eighth has certain power temptations, and like marrying rich. And the eighth also contains our more immediate relationship to the unknown, our more immediate relationship to death and transformation, and the concept of sacred contracts. And I think all contracts are sacred contracts. So I'm remembering that the matter of the eighth are the contractual arrangements we have with each other. Now, the very odd thing about the sign Cancer, and one of the reasons I focus so much on Cancer in looking at the massive sweeping changes of the world, is I think that this is a commentary about more than people who have Cancer as their main orientation, sun, moon, or rising, in some way speaks to the human condition. You got Aquarius on the eighth house. That's a lot of people. In the eighth, most people have like their spouse, a couple of parents, and their in-laws. Anybody who might list you in their will goes in the eighth, right? That or that facet of them goes in the eighth. The in-laws particularly, because they are the people who enter your life through the marriage partner. The marriage partner counts, but then so do all the other people. The eighth is, it should be a very intimate place with relatively few people in it. But you have Aquarius there, and Aquarius always multiplies the number of people wherever it goes. So it always comes with a group. So who is this group in your eighth house? Well, there is some form of group karma here. There's a lot of possibilities for what we could be talking about here. Everything from being polyamorous to marrying into a family with a huge number of people where you might be an only child and suddenly your spouse's parents have four 14 siblings each. Something like this. But there's also a genuinely collective sense of the eighth. There's a sense of the need and the desire and the evolutionary value of the extended family. And one of your challenges is maintaining your sense of your own individuality in and amongst the extended family. So why do I talk about all this? Well, Pluto's coming. Pluto's coming to the 8th, to your 8th, in March of 23. It will dip in and out of Aquarius through the end of 24, so it makes two different transits over the cusp, and then in late 24, it enters Aquarius to stay for 20 years, till 2044, a long time. For many people, the rest of their lives. So this is the kind of the big transit of them all, and it is very much about the times in which we are living, and the times in which we are living are the times of full digital conditions. And full digital conditions does not mean that we're sending around a lot of memes. Full digital conditions means having the internet injected into your body. It implies things like, I don't know if you've seen the Netflix series Upload, where there's kind of a digital reincarnation where when someone dies, their soul is sucked out of their body or whatever, all their memories and all that, and put into digital form and then uploaded to the cloud where they continue to live based on the quality of the plan they have, the subscription. It's perfect, perfect illustration of the eighth house in digital format. That's some crazy shit. But we are going to see all of this we can see plenty of it right now. But we're going to really see it through these 20 years of Pluto in Aquarius. And I'm personally looking at an almost daily freak show associated with Pluto in Aquarius. It hasn't even started yet. So at the moment, we have an important question. How is this going to manifest for you? And there's no easy answer to that, except to say that it is crucial that you keep your sense of your own being. I'm tempted to use words like your power. What the fuck is that? Well, let me talk a little bit about that. Your sense of your life purpose, your sense of your trajectory, to maintain your contractual independence as much as possible, to make sure that you have as much of the eighth in your possession as possible, because when Pluto enters that house, in a sense, it is going to take over, and there is some new influence that is going to affect the entire world through Pluto in Aquarius. It's going to manifest slightly differently for everyone, though there's going to be quite a lot of common ground between and among people. Because it is all going to come back to what it means to remain human, what it means to be in possession of your humanity, as opposed to surrendering your humanity in some way, voluntary or involuntary, and giving up being a person. Now, the thing is, most people are not that attached to the benefits of being a person because they don't really have very many of them. And so I think one of the disturbing allures of the of Pluto and Aquarius is going to be, well, it really wasn't working so good for me anyway, so fuck it, I'll just be, you know, whatever. I'll just sign this thing or accept this plan or have the implant or have the injection, or I'll believe what this computer says about me. That's a big one. And essentially give up my personhood because it wasn't such great shakes anyway. Please. Proceed slowly here. There's a lot to contemplate with Pluto moving through your eighth house. Certainly one of the themes is death and transformation related. Value and cherish the people who are in your life. Make sure that you are genuinely close to the people in your life who you value, love, and trust. And do your best to have as little unfinished business with them as possible. To live on let's say low karmic credit rating. You want to make sure that you are on level ground with the people that you care about the most. I really don't know what this is going to be about on the most personal level, but I will say that the things I've described are ways that you can prepare for it, and that in particular, in terms of maintaining your independence from groups and from organizations and from any form of groupthink. Groupthink means sacrifice of the individual's intention, will, personhood, and creativity to some larger thing that's supposed to be good for all of us. We've seen this come through in fully toxic form in spades the last 2 years. Most people did not notice this is what was going on. But should something like that come back, it's going to be ever more important that you really understand your arrangement with yourself. And you honor, above all, your commitments and your contracts with yourself. One of the reasons I think that the kind of chaotic transit of Mercury, of Mars retrograde in Gemini that I described in the first segment, maybe, I'm not sure which one, all of them probably, is so crucial is because this will help you work out your relationship to yourself. So by the time Pluto arrives in Aquarius in March, Mars will have undergone its entire odyssey in Gemini. It's going to be all done. It begins in August with Mars entering Gemini. It ends in March with Mars leaving Gemini and entering your sign, entering Cancer. And at the same time, Pluto changes signs. So this is preparation for Pluto in Aquarius for all of us. But I think that if the... working from my premise that the most important thing we can do under Pluto and Aquarius position, conditions is to have the most solid relationship with ourselves that we can, which for most people is a whim. cannot be for you, and you will have help from these influences working this out. The challenge, of course, with Mars retrograde in your 12th, square Neptune, which is a very 12th house thing by itself, is saying much of what you will be experiencing through this solar year is sorting out truth from fiction, which means your truth from your fiction. Now, this is some deep introspective work. 12th house work is very deeply introspective. 9th house stuff, particularly where 12th is involved, so Neptune's in the 9th, Mars is going to be in the 12th. Again, very deeply introspective. But that square is going to want to project itself outward. That's the nature of the square, is to create so much tension inside that those who can't handle the tension end up projecting it outward. There's a lot in Course in Miracles about this. This is the direction I would say is not going to be that helpful. You want to keep your internal material internal and work it out. Now, this is all going on during this 10th house bonanza of Jupiter in the 10th in Aries and Chiron in the 10th and the conjunction of Chiron and Jupiter in the 10th in March. So there is this deep level of stuff going on inwardly. And then there is this worldly opportunity to do things that you want to do to succeed in ways you want to succeed. You are one person, so you can't really keep these separate, but you need to know which is which. What's the inner work and what's the outer work and what's the relationship between the inner and the outer work? It helps to do the inner work first. You can't say, well, I'm going to put off anything involving, you know, making this career change I want to make or doing this thing that I really want to do until I'm all perfected and I'm and it's all worked out and I'm done with therapy. No, that does not work. That is just mere delay. So therefore you must be very conscious and mindful every day. Really take each day at a time. What is it that I want to do today? What is it that I need to do today? What is the most efficient way to meet my obligations or my most creative way so that I can do the things I want to do and to keep that dialogue going, that constant referencing between these two layers of motivation, desire and necessity, so you can do your best to have an optimal expression of them. So, I mean, if it is not clear from the previous hour and a half of me going on about this astrology, this is a very unusual time in your life with tremendous opportunities for worldly expression through all of this Aries in your 10th and deep inner work going on with Mars retrograde in the 12th. All right, that is pretty much what I have to say to you. I'm happy to respond to questions. You can put them right onto the page below, the what we call the delivery page, where you're listening to this or watching the video, and I will check in there, or Victoria or someone will tell me that someone has asked something, and I'll be happy to maintain an open dialogue. Should there be some deeply sensitive matter you want to communicate with me about, please do that at EFC. Here's a nice quiet email address, EFC@ChironReturn.org. I hardly get any email there. Again, EFC@ChironReturn, www.newmoon.org. All right. Well, thank you for listening to this explication and analysis of this astrology. I know it's intense. There's a lot. So because we have had this particular exchange, this transaction, I'm here if you need me. You know where to find me. Happy birthday, by the way. And thank you for the slight delay in getting this reading to you. Quite a few things had to move over for your future, your life readings, which were completed about a week and a half ago. Once again, thank you for your trust, your business, and your time. And bye for now.